Do you lead an organization, a business, a company, a nonprofit? Imagine if your people delivered truly inspired performance day in and day out. Well, it can happen. The challenge lies in knowing what motivates your people. That's where SEMA International comes in. They unlock the mystery and the magic of human motivation. To learn more, visit SEMAInternational.com. S-I-M-A International. For 50 years, they're experts in retained search, talent management, and personalized coaching. Check out SEMAInternational.com. Welcome back to Circles of Change. Marlis Hansen from SEMA International. Welcome to the show, Marlis. How are you this morning?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, I heard a bark in the background. That's one of your office mates, right?
Yes. It never fails.
Never fails, does it? They're just like kids. They sleep soundly until you get on the phone. Then suddenly the demands are there. Well, we set you up nicely with the segment beforehand. Mark Samuel from MCAT Corporation. We were talking about making yourself indispensable. And, of course, in the process, Mark couldn't help slide in the fact that if we're playing to our strengths, and that which comes to us easily, the idea then of affording us the chance to give it away and help others in great service is really the end game of all. So I know today, perfect, you're and my wanting to delve into the subject. So how is it we really identify, you know, those passions and that purpose?
And why is it so important to do that? You know, what does this really, you know, give a person, I think, is an important part of kind of setting the stage for this. This whole model is a behavioral consistency model, which really says that, your past performance is predictive of your future performance. So by looking back and looking at the things that you really enjoyed doing and felt you've done well, you can recover, you know, and identify the themes that can serve as a guidance for what would be motivating for you in the future. And it isn't that you have to, you know, do the same thing exactly, but the opportunity to engage the same kinds of motivations and abilities in the future that have worked for you in the past is what we're, you know, looking to identify.
But we're also being mindful that they're the ones that you really wanted to do, right? It's not necessarily the ones that you had to do or that people told you you should be able to do.
Right, and the process of looking at what we call your achievement data, which are things that you both enjoyed doing and felt you did well, and if that's done appropriately, it will help you to differentiate those that you had to do from what you really enjoyed doing.
Had to do meaning that they, and not necessarily forced, but hey, it was just part of the job or part of that phase of your life. But we're really trying to get people to dig deeper to say, you know, what are the things that kind of made your soul sing, right?
That's right. That's right. And to recognize that, you know, these recurring themes are indeed enduring. I mean, they appear very early in our lives, which is why when we go through this process, we ask people to think of childhood events that they remember, because those are, you know, early clues for what's going to follow. And these themes will reappear in your life, you know, almost like a beach ball that you can't keep underwater.
That's right.
But you may not recognize them unless you really go through a process of, you know, looking at how they do reoccur. And that you never really get, it's insatiable. You never really get enough of what you're really truly motivated to do.
Sure, it's just like for those who like chocolate, you know, there's no such thing as not enough chocolate. And, oh, by the way, if dessert isn't chocolate, why waste the calories, right?
That's right.
Well, Marlis, I know you have had the pleasure of building your muscles, I'll say, your intellectual muscles, analytical muscles, on doing this form of analysis for now over 30 years. I have the pleasure of being one of your students, frankly, for the last 4 years, and between the two of us now doing some 200 of these. Isn't it interesting when we ask people to think about their lifetime accomplishments? Well, first off, as you and I would say, they might not be Nobel Prize-winning things, right?
That's right, and that sometimes puts people off, in terms of their getting, you know, wading into this process. They think, oh, well, I really don't have anything to write about. You know, I don't have any, I didn't get any awards. You know, I just haven't anything to write about. But what we find is even the most ordinary daily kind of achievement, if it meets those criteria, something they enjoyed doing and felt they'd done well, is rich in the kind of data that we need.
Well, and in fact, I recall you and I, we did the one pattern for a gentleman who's a very well-known and established CEO, and he told us 8 of his stories verbally after having written all about them. But it wasn't until he started telling the story about when he was a child helping his dad assemble bicycles at the department store before Christmas that he really got excited about the process. He stood up. And, you know, he's probably in his mid-50s. It was as if he was back building the bikes with his dad again when he was 10 years old. So it's some of those early life things that really we can't help but let that exuberance shine.
That's right. And remember the gentleman that talked about creating the models of kind of the layouts of rivers and streams and, you know, whole topographical kind of scenario is in the dirt road in front of his house.
Yeah, with his kid brother, right?
With his kid brother. And now, and for years, he's been a model builder for the Corps of Engineers. So, you know, just it's just incredible how the past really is predictive of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there's a lot of education and experiences that, you know, link the two, the threads of what the person is motivated to do just do, appear very early. And we always, you know, always say anyone who's raised more than one child knows this, you know, how early these differences appear and how, you know, immutable these traits are.
And how different they are from child to
different.
Child.
Mm-hmm. Even though they're genetically the same.
That's exactly right.
Makeup.
Well, those who just turned in, we are speaking with Marlis Hansen from SEMA International. We're specifically delving into the framework for her book, as well as the process the two of us engage with clients. Her book is called Passion and Purpose, How to Identify and Leverage the Powerful Patterns that Shape Your Work and Life. And it's a self-guide through part of this process. So, Marlis, the idea that first we ask people to really make a list of those 15 to 20 both work and personal life achievements, then down select 8, and then how is it you ask them to describe themselves then through those?
Well, we ask them to describe for each of the 8 achievements that they select from this chronology of maybe 15 or 20 to describe several aspects. The key questions are, how did you get involved in the activity? How did you know what to do? Was there any part of the activity that you really enjoyed or felt that was most engaging for you? What was it that you thought you uniquely contributed to making this work? You know, just everything that you can think of to tell that would describe for someone reading it or listening to you what they would have seen you do. You know, like if they were a fly on the wall or a mouse on the shoulder or whatever you want to call it.
Or the person behind the video camera, right?
Or the person behind the video camera. What would they see you doing? So the extent that you can describe this, you know, clearly, you will be providing the kind of evidence that's needed to develop the accurate recurring evidence. Now, some people have trouble writing that kind of detail. And so we suggest that if that's you, you know, get someone to ask you these questions. Mm-hmm. Write the questions down, give them to the interviewer, and just have them stick to those questions and let you talk. And then, of course, you can transcribe the interview if you want and get the words down on paper so that you can, you know, begin to look for the recurring themes. But the important thing is to get that detail out there that really describes you in action. And then, of course, for each achievement, you want to be sure to tell what was most satisfying and enjoyable about having done this achievement, because that's really going to be the key for telling you what the outcome or payoff is that you seek from your efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the piece of motivational patterns that I think individuals, most people just have no idea what the answer to that question is. So your work in defining what was most enjoyable and satisfying is really an important part of the process.
And, you know, I'm sure there's listeners that will say, well, come on, I've been through every sort of assessment process known to mankind. I've been in group dynamic assessments. I've been videotaped. I've done a battery of online assessment tools, so on and so forth. But the biggest distinction about what we're talking about here is nowhere is any of this forced choice. right?
That's right.
It's not a forced choice preference check in the box. It's letting us see what's going to naturally come out of your stories.
And the problem with forced choice is that it's so easy to bias the responses, either consciously or subconsciously. Because we may have in our mind something that we think we want to become or that we think we want to do. And so when we have two or three responses to choose from, we will go for that one that leads us more toward what we think the answer should be.
Well, particularly if these assessments are being administered by your company. And then there's this sense, you know, even though I know they say this is for my development, is this still not maybe sort of a test to see if I even belong in this job or this department?
And sometimes it's just very subconsciously. I mean, impacts our answer, and it's a bias that we don't even recognize. Whereas the SEMA assessment that we're talking about requires the individual to start with a blank sheet, if you will, and to provide the data. And it's very, very difficult to either game this, you know, in the sense of making it become what you want it to be, or to slant it in any way, because it's very difficult to be consistent in the detail across those achievements, across those 8 achievements. And what happens if a person tries to do that is that it just falls flat. You know, there is no pattern.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's easy for, to see that this is not authentic data here.
Well, I think the other thing we tell people constantly, though, is that what we can offer them is not just the report at the end from which coaching and analysis happens, but quite often we see people actually uplifting in their spirits as they go through the process, because it is not judgmental or evaluative.
Right. And that's another, I think, feature of the SEMA assessment that is really different from all other assessments, that it's not a deficiency assessment. It doesn't tell you what's wrong with you. It tells you what you do in a recurring way that meets those criteria of enjoyment and satisfaction. And so the payoff comes from, of course, the fit then of finding a way to use or engage those recurring motivations. So where some jobs would not be a good fit, others would be a really good fit. So the point that the outcome of the assessment is really a fit analysis rather than a deficiency analysis.
Certainly, and let's give a classic example. We'll use me, for example. My payoff, having gone through the process with you and your colleagues back in 2002, beyond a shadow of a doubt, points to the fact that I'm a pioneer. I like to impact change, extract potential, live to commitments, and then prevail. So we know, thus, if I get in a position or I'm asked to go just slightly iterate or improve a given organization, that is not going to be enough to trip my trigger. And that instead it needs to be something where, no man has ever gone before? Or in some regards, if the subject is introduced with this, you probably won't be able to do this, but, and that's a sure hook to get me to do something. You're not good enough, smart enough, or it's too hard. I'm like, get out of the way, I'll take it, right?
When they start waving that flag.
That's right. The surrender flag goes up. Zara goes, wait a minute, I'll take the green and the checkered. We're rolling. But the flip side, of course, is we know that, we can't be everything to everybody or even to ourselves as much as we might think we could. Even if we went to infinite training programs, we get it back to, how are we innately motivated? And we're really to play to our strongest suits. And then, likewise, as you would say, some of those strengths in some contexts can be real limitations. So we have to be mindful of that, too.
Yes, and there might be situations where, for example, with your pattern, where the desire to impact is so powerful that in the where they don't want that kind of impact, that they would feel that it's too much too soon.
Mm-hmm, too threatened, or as I say, I have to turn the volume down so they can hear the nice tones in the music.
That's right. And to remember that no one is motivated to do everything.
Everything, yeah.
So we really need to reach out and team up with others who will complement our motivation. And so many times we see this, whether it's by accident or really by divine intervention, with couples. Somehow or another they will have been attracted to each other for how they complement each other. Mm-hmm. And, that one will bring a specific kind of contribution, to their their marriage or their work, and the other has something else, and so that they can team up together and work very efficiently together. And I know when I did marriage counseling with this for a few years, some of the major conflicts in relationships that we saw is when people were too much alike.
Yeah.
And we see this in the workforce as well. I think of a team that I worked with not too long ago where there were several people in the team who wanted to be unique and outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And so there just wasn't room for all those people to do that in this role. But it was interesting after they understood that about each other, how they found ways to allow that. And let people be unique in different areas and recognize, how they were tripping over each other by competing over similar territory.
Yeah, and back to the organizational context, this is a good place to go. That's where the fundamental test should be placed on all these leadership development programs that we want to encourage all this, fill in the skills matrix. And it's one thing to do the skills training, but if at the same time we're not thinking about the motivation behind it, then some of that training is for naught. It's not going to stick.
Well, each of us has areas that we can think of that, you can go take a class and get an A in it, and then 2 weeks later you can't remember what was said,
Right, which means you're probably really good at taking classes, right?
That's right, by learning, by reading and studying.
That's right.
I always think about what my husband always says about my computer skills or lack thereof. He always says, how many times do I have to teach you this, because it just doesn't stick. It is not what I'm motivated to do.
Exactly. Well, Marla, some of the questions I know we commonly get from people is, what if I've never had the chance to go do something, and thus it's never been allowed to come out of my motivational pattern?
Yes, and one of the benefits, I think, of going back through your life and looking at your achievements and also thinking about this for a little bit is, if you're really motivated to do something, you will find a way to exercise that motivation somewhere in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most frequent areas discussed under this heading is, what if I've never had the opportunity to supervise? How do I know whether that would be right for me? Well, what we see in people who have that motivation is very early in their life, they will find a way to exercise that. For example, I think of a woman, a director that we did not too long ago. One of her early childhood achievements was organizing her brothers and sisters around their chores at home, and then talking their mother into letting her dispense the allowance if her siblings got their work done.
Right.
And I think she was one of the younger. She wasn't the oldest sibling.
Right. That was the key. She wasn't the oldest, right?
Right. And often you see, crossing guards in school, or mm-hmm. Teaming up, leading their neighborhood kids in, putting on a play together, and they're the director, And, I mean, there's just so many ways that people, start to express their motivation, even though they're not sort of put in that role. That if you're really motivated to do it, and unless you live in a really, really restrictive or abusive situation, you're going to find a way to express that.
That's exactly right. And in fact, you'd say it's not even, you can't repress it.
Right.
So if you're not getting those wonderful taste buds satiated in your day job, it's going to show up in your, 5 to 9 job after hours.
Right.
Of course, what we want to look for, particularly if we're using this knowledge to help enhance someone's performance at work, is to get more and more of those drives satiated in the work world.
That's right. I was thinking of the woman in the workshop here a couple weeks ago who as a childhood event, she talked about taking care of the family's ducks.
Ducks, yes.
Remember that?
I remember that, oh yeah.
And one of the ducks that she had was particularly interested in trying to train, she called him Lucky Duck.
Right.
And one of the other individuals in the workshop said, I think the real lucky ducks are the people that work for this lady.
That's right, and because you could see this knowing smile, and by any stretch of imagination, she was not one that would necessarily popped out of the group as you know, necessarily the strongest leader. In other
That's
words,
right.
that charismatic side, but that her nurturing side, her caring for her people, was something that set her apart.
And that's often the case, that you just can't tell by looking around who's motivated to do what. And that, for the most part, individuals are just generally aware of only a portion of what they're motivated to do.
That's really true.
They just don't have the whole picture.
Well, and that's no surprise, right, Marlis?
Right.
I mean, how can we really see to know and appreciate that we breathe air or that our heart is pumping? This
right.
is something that's just
right.
really scribed in our how we are. And so having a process that we can reflect it and bring it out of us so that we then can put our hands on it and do something with it is so important.
And I could go through the different sort of elements of this pattern, but it's probably better if a person's interested in doing this, if they invest the, $20 to get a book, because it has all the subsets in it. But the key areas are, the abilities that reoccur in your achievements, the subject matter that you like mm-hmm. to work with, the way you relate to others. You know, in your work, are you the individual that does it? Are you an influencer? Are you the person who wants overall responsibility? Then there's the circumstances, what triggers your motivation, what sustains it. And then lastly, the payoff or outcome that you seek from your efforts. But each of these areas have subsets. And you'll do a much better job of identifying your recurring motivation if you have that taxonomy, if you will, or that list of subsets in front of you.
And I think the other piece of it is that when you go through a process like this, as I did for the first time back in 2002, is your pattern does not change over time. So it's a lifetime investment that we can use at subsequent points in our day-to-day existence.
Right. And once you have this kind of insight, it would just explain so many things about what's going on in your, current life. Why some days, really work great, you come home feeling wonderful, and other days, you just can't get up and get going in the morning because of what you have to do that day. And it gives you an analytical tool for differentiating and figuring out the whys of those kinds of different experiences.
I think the other thing we have to remember, though, is once you get the data, it's one of those you can run, but you can't hide.
Right.
Because it's always going to be there. And so now when we get ourselves in situations, you're thinking, why in the world did I react that? Or why did the committee in my head start gibbering about this? And if you stay, wait a minute, let me take a step back and realize these are where my strengths are and these are the limitations I need to be mindful of and get help from others or systems or tricks to manage around to help make sense of it.
And if you spend time really describing your achievements, as we've talked about, it's like holding up a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't like what we see in that mirror, but it's hard to hide from what is there. And so if we can understand that and leverage that, we're in a much, better position to be both, satisfied and successful. And also, if we can understand where the limitations are, we're in a much better place to manage those.
Yeah, that's right.
By teaming up, by building some kind of a structure that, really kind of holds our feet to the fire to do something, if that's what we have to do to fulfill our job, it just gives you so much more information to act on and to make more informed and accurate decisions.
And I think we would also share with our listeners that this spans from, the high school students trying to make the decision on what to study in college, even what university would be a good match for them, all the way through to couples that are planning their act two and what does life look like after we turn in the keys to the office and pattern this new life together.
Right, especially as people are living longer, retiring
yes.
earlier, and, lifelong learning, it's just no longer an option, it's a necessity. And just to be able to, handle your banking practices these days. I mean, we just switched to a new bank and everything is online.
Yeah, exactly. And Merle is saying, how many times do I have to explain this to you, Marlis? And you're saying, honey, you take care of that. I'm taking care of this.
That's right.
That's great.
Department.
That's right. Well, Marlis Hansen from SIMA International. It's SIMA International.com. Thank you, as always. And Marlis's book, something really to think about, folks. It's Passion and Purpose, How to Identify and Leverage the Powerful Patterns that Shape Your Work and Life. You can can also go to thelarsengroup.com and touch over 30 segments than Marlis and I have done over these 2.5 years. So, Marlis, thanks a lot for your help, and we'll talk to you in the next couple weeks.
Fine, thank you.
Great, have a nice afternoon.
Take care.
Perfect.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays 10 to noon right here on 104.1 The Truth for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.